The following is a Hoop Bowl presentation.
What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome to the show. It's David and Isaac. This is Hoop Ball Grizz. And we're going back to Salt Lake City with our back in the corner. Our back. Isaac and I aren't really going to Salt Lake City. The Grizzlies are going to Salt Lake City with their back in the corner after losing game four in Memphis. That was a phenomenal game, man. There are things that I did not care for during the game, but I'm not going to be too harsh on them as far as the Grizzlies, because it was not lack of effort. There were some defensive lapses overall, but just a phenomenal effort from these guys last night. The Jazz are just the better team.
Yeah, and I got into that conversation last night a lot on Twitter. There were a lot of Grizzly fans just bashing them last night, saying we're terrible, our defense is terrible. And I think a lot of times people get out of perspective with things. I mean, you have to understand, this is a 1-versus-8 matchup. I mean, the Utah Jazz are number one seed for a reason, and they put pressure on your defense. I mean, that's what they do. I mean, they hit 17 threes last night, and people are complaining about the three-point shooting by them. I mean, they average 16 made threes a game during the season. I mean, this is what they do. They don't just do this against the Grizzlies. They do it against everybody, and their offense is schemed around getting these shots. And, I mean, you can play better defensively, but it's tough. I mean, when you have Rudy Gobert out there setting screens, the way he's able to set screens and these guys moving around, their offense is schemed around getting these open shots, and it's tough because you have to pick your poison. Outside of Gobert and Favors, everybody on this team in their rotation can knock down threes, and it just puts so much pressure on your defense. And even a lot of times when you're playing good defense, you still end up giving up a pretty good look, and that's just what we saw last night. But, I mean, this team played hard. I mean, I had no problem with the effort last night. At the end of the day, the Jazz are just the better team. I mean, you just have to tip your hat. And when in the postgame press conference, when you kind of listen to the guys, you listen to what Ja was saying, he's basically saying that, I mean, we're just going to go out there and do what we do. I mean, there's not much that we can change now at this point. It just kind of is what it is. We're going to go out there and play our game. That's what we do, and we'll see what happens. And, I mean, that's just kind of what it is. I mean, I feel like the Grizzlies played well last night. Again, I just think in the end, Utah was just a little bit too much for them.
Yeah, you know, the thing with the Utah offense, just like you said, outside of Favors and Gobert, everybody on that team can shoot the three. Whether it's Yang, Clarkson, O'Neal, Ingles, you know, that outside of the center, every other player, all four of the other guys on the floor can knock down a three. And the Grizzlies done a great job rotating. They did get in trouble over helping, and that's where the open threes came from.
Yeah.
And I could see where people could, you know, bash the defense because of that. It's a breakdown. There was a play, it was near the end of the game in the fourth quarter. The Grizzlies were within 4 points. Somebody missed a shot, offensive rebound, kick back out to Mike Conley. He makes a three. Grizzlies are down 7. Go down the floor, empty possession. Grizzlies don't score. Come back, and it's almost the same thing, except it wasn't Conley this time. They come back down the floor. The Jazz shoot, miss it, get an offensive rebound. Actually, hold on. Bojan Bogdanovic, he shoots a wide-open corner three from somebody over helping.
Yeah.
The Jazz get the offensive rebound, and then – and then he shoots another wide open three from the corner. He shot 2 wide open threes. And so I could see I think what happens as fans, when we're watching the game, we know when the plays happen that swing the game. So when Bojan made that three and the Jazz go, it goes from a 4-point lead to 2 possessions later, the Grizzlies are down 10 with 2 minutes to go in the game. People started leaving the forum at that time. We as fans know when the game swings, and those are the plays that stick out to us. You miss the fantastic play on defense. You know, Jaren and his drop defense was something of beauty, man. Like,
yeah.
He would be up. There was one play in particular, and I think Jackson Frank tweeted about it, and he was talking. He showed the video. Tyus Jones was guarding Mike Conley, and Jaren was on Gobert. Jaren goes up to pressure the screen so Conley couldn't shoot the three. Then he's athletic enough to backpedal to deny the entrance pass to Gobert. And then as Conley's driving down the lane, he contested the layup. So there are a lot of great things that this team done defensively. They are just outmanned and overmatched. And that is, you know, 1v8, that's to be expected. There's a lot of great young talent on this team. We've got a lot to look forward to. And it sounds like we're being apologists for the franchise. But I saw a guy on Facebook says, time to hand out some pink slips. This team choked in the playoffs.
There is no choking in this series. I mean, even if they had gotten swept, that's what I said. Even if they hadn't gotten swept, was they were supposed to. If you look at Vegas, the Grizzlies have been a significant underdog in every game in this series. I mean, there was really no choking. Unless they won this series, they were losing every game by 20. Then I could see what you were saying. But they're not. They've been in every one of these games. I mean, they fought tooth and nail, and it just I hated it because I felt like they played really well last night. And I mean, it was just Utah just making shots, man. I mean, and eventually it gets, and someone asked y'all about this, that it does it get demoralizing at times. And I think the Utah offense, it's they have you in scramble mode pretty much the whole game. I mean, you just ping-ponging around trying to guard different guys. And again, it's just tough. I mean, it looks easy. You can sit there on the sideline or at home watching on TV and say, oh, well, man, that's a blown assignment there. But it's tough when you're out there actually trying to guard these guys. I mean, they put so much pressure on you because, again, they have so many snipers out there. It is just hard. And eventually, they're going to find a way to get one of these guys open. It just seems like throughout this series, they've just nailed every one of these. Anytime you make a mistake, and that was kind of the theme last night in the press conference, anytime you make a mistake, this team makes you pay for it. I mean, they haven't let the Grizzlies off the hook seemingly at all during this series. Every time the Grizzlies make a mistake,
that's the first game.
I mean, every time the Grizzlies make a defensive mistake, it's a three-pointer. I mean, and it's this team. This team is really good. I mean, it's just, and that's the end of the story. I mean, it's not that these guys are giving. I saw a lot of people even doing a run last night saying that I don't like the effort in this game, and I'm like, we must be watching different games right now because the effort is not the problem. I mean, these guys are playing their ass off right now, and I mean, it's just Utah's just better. And I mean, again, I just kept telling people that last night, people just freaking out, losing their minds. Like, this is a game where the Grizzlies were favored by 10. And like, we were going back to the Oklahoma City game that they lost shorthanded, and we're wondering what's going on here. This is not that. This team is fantastic. And I mean, they're the number one seed for a reason. And it seems like people forgot that a little bit last night.
Yeah, you know, you go down, you look at their roster, and pretty much everybody not named Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert made multiple threes last night. Bojan made three. Royce O'Neal made three. Donovan Mitchell made two. Mike Conley made three. Jordan Clarkson made four. And Yang made two. Joe Ingles was the only non-center player to not make multiple threes. It's just tough to overcome that. We talked about pregame, the things the Grizzlies need to do in order to win this game.
And they pretty much did them.
Yeah, you know, like you would like to see the Grizzlies make a couple more threes to close that gap a little bit. But even let's say, I would say it was seven. The Jazz plus made 17.
Yeah.
If the Grizzlies made 12 threes, that would be, I would think that the coaching staff would be okay with that.
Plus five is kind of, I think it's kind of that line where you want. I think they were plus six last game. And I kind of said that was okay with the mouse scoring them in the paint by 20. But, yeah, plus five, I think somewhere right in there is kind of where you wanted. Seven is a bit too many, even though that puts them plus 21. The Grizzlies outscored them. Where's the paint points? By 24 points in the paint. So, I mean, they made up for their deficit just like they did in game three. And, again, and I said this after game three, you look at this box score, and the Grizzlies, for the most part, did what you would like to see them want them to do. I mean, rebounding, they tied them in rebounds. Both had seven offensive rebounds. So they tied there, which is, I mean, you go up against a team that has Gobert, that's pretty good. I mean, if you can tie them in rebounding. You just look down at box score. I mean, they outshot them. Grizzlies, 43 of 92 for 46.7%. Utah, 39 of 85 for 45.9%. So, I mean, Grizzlies went there. I mean, the free throw line is kind of kind of a glaring difference here where Utah, I think, is plus eight, and they lost the game by seven. I mean, you hate to harp on officiating. There were some questionable calls in this game, and it, I mean, that's just something that you're going to deal with when you're a small market team. I mean, I'm not going to get into conspiracies or anything like that, because a lot of times these things even out. But I mean, there are some questionable calls and things that go against the Grizzlies in games.
There
like
was
this.
Really, really only one to me that was, it got reviewed. Jenkins challenged it.
Yeah, and I was glad to see that.
There is nothing that anybody can ever say to me that's going to convince me that that was a foul. DB done everything that he should have done. He contested the shot. Donovan Mitchell, when he came down, he stuck that leg out. If he goes up and straight back down, DB is not in his landing zone. There was no contact at the top of the shot.
If anything, it's an offensive foul.
Yeah.
If anything,
when he sticks his foot out, that's what it's supposed to be. But Donovan Mitchell knows how to play the system because he's an excellent player, and he got the call. You're going to have that. And these players know that. They, you know, you don't want that to be the case, but you know there's going to be things that are outside of your control. And that was really – there were some other things that were, you know, close that maybe shouldn't have been a whistle. But overall, I think that one call was really the only thing that was a significant – missed call. You know, I didn't go back and look at the 2-minute report to see if there was anything that they missed. But, you know, even if you take that 3 away right there, it's still, you know, you're 117 to 113. Yeah. It's a 4-point game. And I know, like, what it does mentally to the guys on the floor and momentum and all of that. Like, there's a lot of things that go into it. But it, officiating to me did not cost the Grizzlies this game. I'm not on that
move. No, but one of my things about officiating is when I get – it's not so always so much of the calls going against the Grizzlies being bad. It's like if you see this call, what do you – how do you think that call will go on the other end? And that's kind of my thing with it. I just think some calls that go against the Grizzlies, I think Utah, you'll see some things that they do. They get away with certain things, and the Grizzlies couldn't do that same thing, and it would be a foul on the other end. That's kind of my deal with it. But, no, I don't think officiating – officiating cost them this game at all. I mean, you can look back. You can always go back and say, oh, well, they hadn't made that call. Just like you just said, the momentum might have went the Grizzlies' way, blah, blah, blah. But there's a lot of things that could happen. But that didn't cost them the game last night, no.
A lot of ifs and buts in that for sure. There was one call. Dylan Brooks drove to the basket, and I could see him on the way back down the floor. He's like, you're calling that on the other end. You're calling that on the other end. And, you know, he was letting the official have it, knowing, hey, you know, if you're going to call it on us, you need to call it on them as well. And that's just the nature of officiating, man. For as long as sports has been a thing, there's been officials that miss calls. You go back and you look at their percentages of the calls that they make at the speed that this game is played at and how many they get right as opposed to how many they miss. And it's amazing what those guys do, guys and gals. There's a number of female officials, not attempting to leave them out, but you know what they're able to do at this level is incredible. But it's just we see it as fans. It's glaring when they miss something that's in a pivotal point of the game.
Yeah, man, and just to look back at the game last night, you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier. Jaren Jackson Jr., man, his drop defense. I mean, especially in that second half. I mean, he was fantastic. And I saw, again, a lot of fans getting on him last night, despite him scoring 21 points. They just look at the three-pointers, which I've even said I would like to not see him shoot as many threes. I mean, he just didn't have a three-point shot. But defensively, intangible-wise, and even still put up 21 points, despite him missing, going 3 of 10 from three. I mean, still played up a phenomenal game. I mean, yes. The 6 rebounds, an assist, and a steal. Efficient 9 of 18 from the field overall. I mean, he was fantastic. I mean, this is 2 games in a row where, especially on the defensive side, he looked like old Jared. And I think that's a good sign, positive sign, going into the rest of the series, however long the rest of this series season lasts, going into the offseason, into next year. I think you seeing these things from him, because I feel like the 3-point shot's going to fall. I mean, I'm not worried about that. I've seen enough of a sample size to know that he's a good shooter, and that'll come when he gets his timing back, getting workouts over the summer. He'll be shooting threes at a pretty good clip again next year. I have no doubt about that. But that's a really good thing, and something that I took from this game, that he's going to be okay going forward. Because, I mean, the defensive and intangible other things that he was doing, getting to the basket, just doing a lot of a lot of good things, even things that you're not going to see in the stat sheet. It's good to see him doing those things. And in that vein, man, welcome back, D'Anthony Melton. He's been on a missing person's poster for about a month now, but I mean, he came back in a big way last night, man. Just went on a kind of a personal run there, and I mean, he looked like April D'Anthony Melton, man. So I was glad to see him back.
I'm gonna take 100% full credit for that, and I'm gonna tell you why. Right before, so D'Anthony Melton had missed two wide open threes. They came down the floor, made a cut, they swung the ball over to him, and he had plenty of time to get it off, and he just clanged them. And I tweeted out, I'm like, it feels like it's been 2 months since Melton has made a wide open three. And dude, like, right, I mean, it wasn't 30 seconds after I hit send on that tweet, he made his first three and started going on that run, and I'm like, on cue, bro, right on cue. And so, you know, obviously I had absolutely nothing to do with that, but it was really, really good. And the energy in the forum, whenever he went on that streak, man, it was crazy. The energy in there all night was incredible. But when he hit that hot streak and he was bringing the Grizz back into it there, man, the fans were going nuts.
Yeah, I was gonna say same here. I tweeted, and I was killing. I was like, man, D'Anthony Melton's not giving you anything. I mean, you could put Justice Winslow in there as a defensive mercenary. I mean, if he's not gonna give you anything offensively, you can't say, well, you put Winslow in, you lose an offense. And I even tweeted out when he went on a run. I was like, that he must have been checking in on my tweets and saw what I was saying on Twitter because he came in and went on that run. But yeah, man, it was good to see. And again, man, you just hope what we're seeing, what we saw there is more of what the real thing is, but probably somewhere in between. But again, man, he had been so bad for so long, and that was really good to see him break out like that in a big game and really help bring the Grizzlies back in this game.
So I'm glad you brought up Winslow. The Grizzlies are heading back to Utah. They play the Jazz on Wednesday in Salt Lake City, back at Elevation. I don't suspect that we're going to see any massive changes in the rotation from Taylor Jenkins. And that is not a cheap shot at him. He's done great as far as making adjustments in this series. Doubts that I've had on him have kind of went away a little bit because of things that he's been doing in this series. But do you think that that's what it's going to take? Do you think if they shake it up and say add Justice Winslow to the rotation, you know what he can do, you know, like, you know what he can do defensively. We know that he's a liability on the offensive end. Do you think that defense, because one of the lineups that, and I haven't looked, I'm sorry, excuse me. I haven't looked it up to see what the numbers are, but a lineup that you see Jenkins using is Jaren or JV with four guards out there. There've been a couple times when you would have Dylan at the four. So it'd be Ja, Grayson, Dylan, Bain, and Jaren, or, you know, something of that nature. Do you think a big shakeup, if you're playing a four guard set and you have Justice Winslow out there, his length, his ability to defend, is that going to be enough to sway it? Do you feel like that he could make enough of an impact to be worth putting out there?
I mean, I do. And I suspect that if it was going to happen, I know their backs against the walls is going into game five. And that could be a game where you just kind of try some different things to see what works out of desperation. But I don't think we see it. I think if we would have saw it, we would have seen it by now. But I actually do. And I thought there were times in the series, especially when you see DB in foul trouble, I thought you could steal some minutes with him to kind of protect Dylan from fouls. I think his length and his athleticism, especially size-wise, you look at these guys like Bogdanovich and Royce O'Neal, I think these are guys that defensively, I think he fits the model of the type of guy that you'd like to have on them. And it just kind of surprises me that he hadn't went to that, especially before what we saw from Melton in the second half last night. I just thought Melton, before then, wasn't giving you anything. And I just thought, you look at defense is what you need. I mean, you're struggling. They're getting these wide open threes. You look on your bench and like, you have this 6'6", 6'7" guy there, long link-wise, that can play defense. Why haven't you deployed him? That's kind of, I don't know if they would have won the games. I don't know if that would have made that big of a difference, but I definitely think there was some opportunities for him to deploy him. I think maybe they just made the decision as an organization that they were just done with the Winslow situation for this year. They're just not going to do it. I don't know, but I think there was some, especially those games where DB was in foul trouble. I thought you could really use them to steal some minutes. I mean, you don't need him to score offensively. This team has been fine. I mean, and again, you've had Grayson. Yeah. There were times where Grayson and Melton were out there. They weren't giving you anything offensively. And I felt like Winslow defensively could have been a little bit of a difference maker in those spots. But again, I would be surprised. I think if we were going to see it, I think we would have seen it by now. But I definitely think it could help. And if it was me, I think I would have used it for some spot minutes at times in this series.
So one thing that they done in the second half last night, coming out, Ja Morant was matched up against Donovan Mitchell defensively. And I wasn't a big fan of that. Sean Coleman and I were sitting there talking, and I'm like, man, I don't know that this is the defensive matchup that that we want to see. And Sean made a great point. He said, I don't disagree with that, but you've got to do something to keep Dillon in this game. The Grizzlies have got to have Dillon in this game. And I was like, yeah. I mean, I understand it. And the thing is, Ja has been, you know, pretty bad on the defensive end. Not as bad as some people make it out to be, but pretty rough on the defensive end. But when he's put in effort, I go back to the first win of last season against the Nets at home. Last possession of the game,
Kyrie.
He was guarding Kyrie Irving, one of the shiftiest guys in the NBA. Like, I would say the best handles. I can't think of anybody that can handle the ball better than him right now. And Ja Morant held his own, blocked a shot to send the game into overtime. And then Jay Crowder comes down, makes the three. Grizzlies get the first win. It was incredible. So he has shown flashes, even outside of that game. That's going back a ways there. But even outside of that game, he's shown flashes that he can be at least a serviceable defender. And I don't know, man. If this is not the time, like if you're not going to step up right now, are you ever going to step up? And that's I feel kind of crazy saying that because I've, you know, Ja's been playing phenomenal, but you know, like your effort on the defensive end at this point in time of the season, this is when you've got to give it everything.
Yeah, I don't think he'll ever be a plus defender. I mean, I just don't see it. But I, like you said, there are times like when he gets fired up. And he gets in and has it going offensively. There are times where he picks up and aggressive, and I've seen him play really well defensively. There was a stretch this year, I can't remember exactly when it was, in a couple games where he was, excuse me, man, struggling with the voice tonight, where he was pretty good defensively. When you see him put in an effort, you've seen him look even more serviceable defensively. And it is. I mean, like you said, if you're not going to step up on in the floor right now, I mean, when are you going to step up? But again, I don't think he'll ever be a plus defender, but I think he has the potential to be at least passable defensively, and I think that's a step that you need to see from him. Other than outside of him being a better shooter, I think that's kind of the other area where you'd like to see him improve. And I mean, I think he will. As I talk about his work ethic all the time, I think he's going to become a better shooter, and I don't see any reason why he won't end up being the best defender, whatever that is, that he can be.
Yeah, and I think we've seen that shooting improve just in this season alone. So he's going to continue to put that work in.
Yeah, he's probably going to put a 1,000 shots up a day. I wouldn't be surprised this summer. Yeah. He's going to definitely put the work in because I know he hears that criticism of him. And I think at times, especially earlier in the season, I think before they figured some things out, I think he was really frustrated with the way teams were guarding him. And I think that's why he kind of continued to work on his shot because I think he knew he needed to do that to open up the rest of his game. So we saw that he went from like, I don't even know, 23% or something from three into the low 30s in the season. So that lets you know how much he's worked on that shot. He was staying out the games at times, getting threes up. So he'll continue to improve there. I have no doubt about that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he's been electric in this series. So, you know, we're kind of critiquing some of the things that we would like to see improve, but he's averaging 31 rebounds and almost 8 assists a game. So, you know, it's like, what more can you ask from him? And you know, we expect the best, and he expects the best from himself. You know, there's nobody that's harder on Ja Morant than Ja Morant himself.
Yeah, I mean, you'll see he could score. He could go out and score 60 points. If they lose, he'd be upset in the press conference. And we talked about that before. He just says it's not enough. And in that vein, he means that they didn't win the game. It doesn't matter whether he scores 60 points. He takes all these honors, the accolades, the youngest player to do this, that first in the playoff games. But he said if they don't win games, none of that stuff really matters. And, again, I love that about him because that's a true sign of a leader. I mean, he would be – he could go out there and score 4 points. If they win the game, he'd be excited. And that's what you want from your leader. I mean, he's not worried about going out there padding his stats. He wants to win, and I love that. I think we have a lot of guys on this team that are like that. And he's going to be the leader of this team. And for him to feel like that, I think that's what you want to see. And I love it. I love his attitude. You see a lot of guys, after the team lose, they come into press conference. You can see when they lose games, he's visibly upset. And, I mean, he cares. And, again, I think most of these guys on this team do. All of these guys care. And that's a good sign of a team, especially a young team that's mature beyond their years. I mean, that they care all about winning. These guys are not coming out there to try to pad their stats. And, again, I just love to see that. And Ja is the leader from that standpoint. And again, you love to see it.
Yeah, 100%, man. I want to talk about something here. I saw this conversation, and it was from a few different people on different social media platforms. And obviously, this is not coming, you know, Grizzlies locker room or anything like that. But, you know, we do this show to bring you guys information to talk about stuff and try and give you a different look on it. But I've seen a lot of discussion about BC lately and where's he at? Why isn't he playing? I saw one person saying that playing Kyle Anderson over BC is a fireable offense. Just some crazy stuff. And I think you've got to understand when you're in a playoff series, you're not going to play 10 guys. If you go back and you look.
Yeah, they only played nine last night. They didn't even play 10.
Go back and look over the history of the game. From regular season to postseason, when you get into the postseason, you're playing your eight, maybe nine best players. And I'm not saying that BC is not in the top eight or nine for the Grizzlies, but what he's done this season has not put him in a position to be on the floor right now. So, you know, like the changes, the mechanical changes to his shot, coming back off the injury, I feel like he just hasn't been 100% all year long. So I fully expect to see him bounce back year three. We're going to call this a sophomore slump. And I think that he's going to come back year three and he's going to be strong. And when the Grizzlies make the playoffs next year, I think that there's a great chance that he will be in the rotation. But he has not done anything this season to warrant that. You can't go ahead.
No, I was going to say, no, he hasn't. I mean, and they even tried it. You go back to game three, he tried to give BC minutes, and it was rough. And people were making jokes on Twitter, like, you asked for BC, and you got him. But, yeah, I mean, it was rough. I mean, if he's not going to – it is a tough situation, because especially against this Utah team, because we talk about Jared at the five and how he struggled earlier in the series, and BC just doesn't – have the size. I mean, he's not going to be able to rebound against Gobert and Favors. And I mean, it's just a rough spot for him. And I think Cal and even Tillman, the few minutes that he's gotten, which are not great matchups. Tillman's not a great matchup against Gobert or Favors either, but I think he brings more to the table, the size wise and strength wise than BC does. This is a bad series for BC. And again, if we go back to what Clark was last season, and he would 100% be in a rotation. But if he's not giving you what he gave you offensively, which he's been struggling even with the floater this year, there's just nowhere for you to play him here. I mean, he's not helping you on the boards. He's too small to really guard anybody defensively in the paint, especially in this series. There's just no reason for you to play him. I mean, I hate that because he's been a good, really good player for this team at times. I mean, he was even touted as being untradeable at times last year, but he just regressed a little bit this season. Like you said, maybe it's a sophomore slump. Hopefully he gets back to what he was in year one. But this season, he really hasn't been that. And in this series, he's not a good matchup at all.
Yeah, and that's, again, guys, we're not here to bash him or, you know, try and downplay what he is or what he means to this franchise, because I still think that he is an important part of this franchise moving forward. It's just not there right now. And, you know, the Grizzlies may very well go on to lose this series without him playing. And you can make the argument of, okay, yeah, he's not being productive, but this time out here in these playoff games would have been good for him moving forward. You're not really – it's been a developmental season, but once you make the playoffs, you're playing You're playing your best players. It's not about developmental anymore. It's about winning the games. And that's what this team is doing. That's what, you know, Coach Jenkins and the staff is doing. That they've done a great job, even though the Grizzlies have come up short. They're down 3-1 right now. It's just a very, very tough matchup for the Grizzlies. And he just hasn't done enough. He's not been there. You know, his consistency has been terrible this year. He was almost a 70% from the field. You know, it was stupid how good he was last year. But he's not that player this year, and it's tough to let go of that. I don't want you to stop being a fan of BC, because I'm definitely not. But you got to look at what has he done, and when you get into the playoff times, it's what have you done for me lately more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, you're playing the guys that are playing well right now, and I mean, he was not playing well there late in the season. And again, I just think this Utah of any teams, I think this is a bad matchup for him size-wise. I mean, you're going up against Gobert and Favors, and strength-wise, he just doesn't have the size to compete with those guys. Outside of JV, and even JV at his size is struggling with these guys, and you're bringing in Tillman. Tillman's a little bit bigger and stronger than even BC, and they're struggling against Gobert. So it's just, I think, a bad matchup for him. I think if they were going against Phoenix or Denver or some other team, you might see him a little bit more, and he might have been a little bit more effective. I just think this is a bad matchup for him. And again, you're just, when you look at your top 8, 9, 10 guys, I think it's very arguably that he's just not in that top 10 right now, especially you said currently the way guys are playing, he's just not in that top 10 right now.
Yeah. And you know, Denver is a good example. You know, he would be Michael Porter Jr. BC would be a good matchup for him.
Yeah.
He's got the speed. He's got the athleticism. You know, he can stay with Michael Porter Jr. And you may see BC get more minutes if the Grizzlies were in a series against
them. Yeah, I definitely think so.
But yeah, it's just not there for him right now. And that's okay. You know, we finish this series out, win, lose, or draw, and go into the offseason, get everybody healthy, reload for next year, and then see what we got, see what happens. He's going to have a complete offseason of not rehabbing. He's going to be able to go into this offseason and get shots up. I pray that they find something that looks more natural to him. And maybe reps will get that. But at the beginning of the season, it looked clanky and robotic. And I'm like, oh, it'll get better with reps. It'll get better with reps. We saw it climb and start to look better. And then it just kind of went away.
Yeah,
and I don't know what happened there. But it just has not looked natural for him at all. It looks weird. So hopefully he's able to figure that out going into next season, because it's affected his free throw stroke, his 3-point shot, and even his little bunnies around the rim that he just was not missing last season.
Yeah, well, so, one thing I do want to touch on, this is completely changing base here. Me and you both, we were in the Utah presser before the game last night with Coach Quinn Snyder, and I was really impressed. I mean, he gets this rap of people saying he looks like a James Bond villain, and it surprised me. He's very thoughtful in his response. It's like, a lot of times, and this is no knock on Taylor Jenkins, a lot of times Taylor Jenkins gives you the quick coach speak type responses. Every question that Quinn Snyder's asked, he goes on like a 3 to 4 minute answer. Like, I raised my hand. I was kind of the first person to raise my hand. I knew being in a Jazz press conference, I was probably going to get called on last, which is exactly what happened, but I was like, man, he's going to talk so long, they're not going to get to me. But they got to me, and I asked him about Ja Morant, and that Ja had basically been able to get to his spots and do pretty much whatever what he wanted to offensively as far as getting to the lane. And was there anything that they had planned to do to kind of scheme against that? And he had high praise of Ja, basically saying that Ja can get to any spot anytime he wants to, and there's really not much you can do about it. He said that you can try to – it's a 5-man effort to try to stop him. You can throw different guys at him. You could throw different looks at him, but if you do one thing, he's going to do this to you. If you do another thing, he's going to do this to you. You basically can't stop him. You just do what you can, but you're not going to contain him. And I thought there was very high praise of a guy in his second year. I mean, it was really, really good to hear that coming from someone outside of the Grizz. And another thing, I asked him about Taylor Jenkins, which they coached together in the G League. Quinn Snyder was the head coach. Jenkins was a young assistant, and he had high praise of him as well, saying even at 24, 25 years old, he knew how special he was, the way that he deals with people, and the way he talks to his players and development-wise, that he knew very, very early on that he was special and that they kind of developed a special relationship just being in that head coach, assistant coach relationship and talking basketball. So I was really impressed with Quinn Snyder and things he had to say in that press conference. Man, I like it. And I felt like, again, he gave very thorough answers. A lot of times you get these coach speak answers when you talk to coaches, and that wasn't at all what you got from Quinn Snyder. I mean, he elaborated on pretty much every question that he was asked, and I was impressed by that.
Yeah. I did not expect for him to
know. No, that's not who I thought he was. No.
Yeah. when you asked that question, I was expecting, just some sort of maybe 5, 6, 7 word answer, and then move on. But that was not it at all. So it was impressive to listen to the stories. I enjoyed listening to him talk about Jenkins and the stuff that they done, back when they were back in the G League together. And then, just the praises for Ja Morant, man. Great stuff from, a good head coach in the NBA.
Yeah,
man. He's got his team in a good position. And, as much as I hate it, more than likely they're moving on from this series into round two. I don't know who they're going to face yet, but, you've got to credit him and his coaching staff for what they've been able to do against the Grizzlies. JV has not been himself, man. He has been such an important part of this Grizzlies offense and just the entire scheme of the team. And the Jazz, 14 and 12, he just has, there's not been a single game where he's really looked like JV in this series. And that is not because he's just playing awful. It's because of Gobert and the scheme that Quinn Snyder and his coaching staff has put together to try to stop him.
Yeah, out of any matchup in the league, I think Rudy Gobert probably neutralizes JV probably more than anybody. I mean, and we make fun of Gobert, said he's soft, he's weak, you hear all these things, but we talked about this last time. Gobert is probably an all-time inside defender. I mean, there is no doubt about that. The guy just wrecks what you're trying to do. I mean, you're not going in the paint and scoring. I mean, he changes the way you think offensively, and he forces you to do things that you don't normally do. I mean, and you talked about this. Out of all the matchups, the potential matchups that they could have faced, this is the one that would have forced the Grizzlies to make the most adjustments. And a lot of that is simply due to Rudy Gobert. And I see a lot of people saying, oh, well, I was wrong about JV. Now I don't think he's part of his future, blah, blah, blah. And I was telling some people early on Twitter, that's not the case. JV is the same guy he's always been. He's just not going up against Rudy Gobert every night.
Yeah. Yep. Man, I don't really have much else from this game. There were a couple plays that I wanted to kind of talk about, and we've kind of touched on them. There was one early in the game. Ja Morant had the ball, and Gobert was kind of barreling in behind him, and Ja just locked the brakes up and let Gobert run him over. And it just a super high IQ play from him.
Savvy.
Yep. And then there was a play when Donovan Mitchell was attempting to guard Ja Morant, and he put that dude in a blender.
Man, it was nasty.
Like, just crazy stuff. And we get to sit back and watch this night in and night out in Memphis. It's going to be great. And that's – what do you legitimately – and it's tough. What do you think a ceiling is for Ja Morant?
Man, that's – God, man, I don't know. I mean, you still see what he's done in this series. I mean, again, there have been times that this year where he struggled, where he wasn't aggressive enough late in games, where we kind of wanted him to kind of take over the way we've seen him do, saw him do in game one and a couple games here, even though they ended up winning. You kind of wanted to see that more, but you see the ceiling. I mean, you see what he can – 47 points in a playoff game. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, I get a really good defensive team, and you hear – that I just mentioned, Coach Quinn Snyder basically said, there's nothing we can do about it. We can't stop this guy from getting in the lane. I just think the last part of his game, of course, is I think he needs to get a little bit better defensively. There's no question about that. And I think he will. Again, I don't know if he'll ever be a great defender, but I think he'll end up being a little bit better defender than he is now. I think the mid-range and three-point shot, once he gets even halfway consistent there, I think he's going to be legitimately unguardable. Like, I don't think you're going to be able to stop him. I think he has, and I hate to say this, but and because of people, I don't want to sound like a homer or anything, but I think he could be a top five player in the NBA. I really do believe that, especially when a lot of these guys now are getting older. They're going to be either facing out of the NBA or not in their prime anymore. I think he could be right there as one of the top five players in the league. And that's, people got on him by saying top five point guard. I mean, he's looked like a top five point guard in this series. I mean, he hasn't always looked like that, but he's flashed that potential. And I think he can do that consistently once he realizes that. And once he works on that jump shot again, I don't think you're going to be able to stop him. And he has that mentality. He's not a timid guy. He has the mentality that, and that's, I think we learned that very early on in his career. And that's what I love about him, is you can see that superstar, that he can go into these modes. He can flip a switch, and once he goes to that mode, there's nothing you can do about it. So, again, I think we could look up 4 or 5 years down the line now, and he's a top five player in the NBA. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, I don't think that's not out of the realm of possibilities for sure, man. He there was a picture, somebody posted a picture, and it's kind of like the older guard fading out, and it had Trey, Ja, Tatum, and man, who was the fourth? I can't even remember. Luka.
Luka, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, like as a changing of the guard in the NBA, man, and he definitely deserves to be in that conversation. I will say this, and I might get tore apart, but I think that Zion deserved to be in that picture, honestly, because even though the Pelicans have been bad, Zion is one hell of a basketball player. Super athletic, the things that he does. You know, he embraced a new role this year, kind of doing the point forward
thing. Point guard thing, yeah.
And it was super sloppy at first. You could tell that, you know, this is not natural for him. But by the end of the season, he was looking pretty good doing it. And so, yeah, he brings a lot to the table. And I know anytime that there's talk of Ja Morant and you get the butt Zion, that crap drives me nuts. But I'm all about, like, first and foremost, I'm a basketball fan. I love the Memphis Grizzlies, enjoy covering this team. But at the end of the day, I can watch any two teams play. It could be the Pistons and the Thunder. I can watch that game. Don't care. I love basketball. And I really like good basketball. And I think as Zion continues to develop, he's going to be one of, you know, obviously the league and ESPN and the mainstream media is pushing for him to be the new face of the league. And it's not because he doesn't have the skill set to do it. I think that he definitely does. So it's going to be fun to watch these guys. This the changing of the guard as LeBron continues to age. And obviously still one of the best, probably the best player in the league right now. And, you know, Steph Curry is not getting any younger. There's a lot of these guys that have been the face and at the front of the league for a long time that we're going to start to see phase out.
Yeah.
And I would not be surprised at all if Ja Morant is – one of the new faces.
Yeah, but with me, with Zion, there's still two questions. I mean, you look at the numbers, and the numbers are phenomenal. The number one thing with Zion, I think that's always going to be a question mark, is health. I mean, we've seen him at that size. Can he maintain his health playing at that size? I mean, I think that's always going to be a question. When we've always seen it in college. We've seen it since he's been in the NBA that he's had injuries. So I think that's one to watch. And another thing is, even though he puts up those phenomenal numbers, how much does that affect winning? How much does that help his teammates? I mean, we've seen guys in the past. I mean, Carmelo is a great example of that. He just put up these monster numbers his entire career, but he could never really get his teams out any advance in the playoffs. And I think that's kind of something to watch with him as well, because you see him put up, and you see him and Ingram, they putting up, he has 35, Ingram has 32, and they're getting blown out. I mean, and it's a question with their team, because it seems like they had enough talent to be better than they were this season, and for some reason they're just not. So I think that's kind of something to watch. But again, I mean, there's no doubt he's a phenomenal talent, and when he gets going, there's not much you can do to stop him. I'm just wondering how much that affects his teammates and how much does it make them better. That's kind of my thing with Zion. But one quick thing I did want to touch on before we get out of here. Taylor Jenkins kind of went away from Kyle Anderson late in the game in that fourth quarter last night. What were your thoughts on that?
I don't like it, to be honest. I mean, like, I'm...
It was surprising to me.
I won't say that I don't like. I like that he's making adjustments. I don't like that he went away from Kyle Anderson for a couple of reasons. Number one, Kyle is great defensively.
Defensively.
That's where you're struggling the most in this series is defensively. You're scoring points. I think the Grizzlies have put up enough points to win in this series. They just haven't stopped enough
points. Yeah, they have got to stop.
And so, even though Kyle does have shortcomings on the offensive end of the floor, he doesn't have to score to be effective on the offensive end. He had 5 assists in this game last night. Just crafty, another ball handler, great playmaking skills. He brings so much to the table. So in one aspect of it, of Jenkins playing based off of his gut and playing the feel of the game, loved it. Love that he's doing that. Love that he's showing the ability to make changes and not staying stuck in his roots. I'm going to do this and just this and only this and being very methodical about it. I love to see that. But on the other hand, when defense is your biggest strain in this series and one of your better defensive players is not on the floor, I'm not a big fan of that, man. That's as much as I love JV, Jaren was not really in foul trouble. I think at the end of this game, for as ineffective as JV has been in this series, I think you got to run Jaren more minutes at the 5. And beginning of this series, I definitely wouldn't have been saying that. Yeah. But over these last 2 games, there's been a massive swing. And again, if the plus minuses are lying to me, like I don't know. I'd have to go back and look up the stats of what the numbers are with these guys on the floor. But it looks like the Grizzlies' defense is significantly better when Jaren is playing the 5 because his athleticism allows him to make up for stuff. You go back, you look at the end of the game. Gobert had 3 dunks pretty close together in the fourth quarter there. All 3 of those dunks occurred when JV was on the floor because Gobert got behind him. JV was not
he just quick enough foot speed
to catch up. And that has been JV in this drop defense, that has been my issue with him all season. Brevin kind of shined a light on it that I didn't look at or I hadn't been looking at it. And that's why I'm glad we had him on. His mind is definitely more well-versed whenever it comes to the game than mine. I mean,
he's great.
And so, he was saying, you get frustrated at the mid-range and the stuff like that, but JV's doing what he's supposed to be doing. It just kind of looks rough. When you're watching it's tough to watch. And his athleticism has taken him out of quite a few plays. And in this series, Gobert, the way that he cuts, he'll slip the screen and cut. And he's had a ton of dunks in this series because JV just does not have the foot speed to keep up with him. And Jaren does. Whenever it comes to the post defense, if they post Rudy up on Jaren, Rudy's going to probably muscle Jaren around because Jaren just doesn't have the meat on him yet. But at the end of the day, defense has been your issue. When I'm closing the game, I want, obviously Ja is going to be out there, not for defensive purposes, but you got to have him on the floor. But the 3 other guys that I want on the floor at the end of the game, Dylan Brooks, Kyle Anderson, and Jaren Jackson Jr. The 5th one, Grayson, if he's hot, if not Bane, our Melton, the way Melton was playing last night. I was not a fan of him leaving Kyle off the floor for so long. But again, it's really a catch-22 because I know that he made that call because he was going off of his feeling of the game. And so it's good to see that, but I don't want Kyle off the floor.
Yeah, it was surprising to me. I mean, I understand the thinking there. I mean, JV is your starting center. That's your 2 starting guys in the paint, Jared and JV. But like you said, JV is – really struggle, and I think defensively in this series they've been better with Jaren at the 5, especially in these last 2 games. I wouldn't have said that game 1 and game 2, but these last game 3 and 4, they've definitely been better with Jared at the five. And again, I just think Cal has been one of your trusted guys all year, and he's been really good in this series. I mean, getting steals, the length that he brings defensively, and that's been your issue. I mean, you had enough scoring on the floor. It's not like JV is putting up big offensive numbers. Not like he's getting like in the 20s like he had been throughout the season. I just think Cal would have been the better player there. I understand his thinking there. You want JV on the floor. I mean, he's your veteran guy. It's a playoff game, high leverage game, and he's one of your quote money players, if you want to say it like that. But I think he should have went with Kyle there. And it's always hindsight 2020. I mean, we're not out there on the sideline making these decisions in the playoff game. But looking at it from afar, I think I would have went with Kyle. That would have been my decision. But we'll see, man. Game five, he backs against the wall. I put this out on Twitter earlier. I wouldn't pick them to win this game, but it also wouldn't surprise me if we're back on Friday for game six at FedEx Forum. This team is performed really well with their backs against the wall, and this is kind of what they've been. I mean, we saw them lose the game to Golden State to play in, come home, beat San Antonio, go back out there. Nobody expected them to win that game, even felt like they blew the game in regulation. And you're thinking, oh, well, this is it. I mean, they had the chance. They blown it. Going overtime, it's Steph Curry time. And nope, was not Steph Curry time at all. The Grizzlies end up winning that game. And again, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all if they came back and we're back here Friday for game six.
Yeah, it was hello, ladies and gentlemen, this is Ja Morant time.
Ja Morant time, exactly.
So, you know, I will say this, and I'm fine going on record saying this. If the Utah Jazz take this game lightly, the Grizzlies will win this game. That because the Grizzlies are not going to quit. They're going out there.
No quitting.
They want to extend this series. The Grizzlies want to win this series. Every single one of these guys want to win this series. They're not going to lay down. So there's still work to do for the Grizzlies. The Jazz have got to bring it. We'll see more basketball at the Forum, and I'm kind of hoping for that. I would love to go back to another game at the Forum. I'm down to go to Game Six back in Memphis on Friday.
It'd be fantastic for them to get another opportunity for Grizz Nation to come out there, support these guys. You could see the attendance increase for that game if it does happen. And again, man, if you lose a series on the road, I think that's tough. Even if they come home to Game Six and they lose, I think that gives the Grizz fans opportunity to show their appreciation for these guys for the year they've had, because I think they deserve that. And I think it's rough, man. You lose it, close out the series on the road, man. You have to fly back home, and I mean, that's just a tough situation. Even if they were to force game six, they lose it here. I'd rather see it end like that than at the end in Salt Lake City, because I think these guys deserve appreciation. Even if they lose, I mean, they're going to be people out at the airport when they come back, but it's not the same as getting one more game in front of these fans. So I'd love to see that, and these guys are not going to quit. I mean, we've seen from this team, there is no quitting this team, and like you said, if Utah takes this game lightly, what I think there's a possibility that they could, because they just feel like, oh, well, I mean, we're up 3-1, we're number one seed, we just going to coast this one, we don't have to put in much effort. Grizz going to pick them off if that happens, and I hope that's what we see, and hopefully we're right back at FedEx Forum on Friday night.
Yes, sir. Man, it would – sorry. Dang, getting the best of me here. It would be – like, that was – I went to the play-in game, the Spurs play-in game, and I've been to the Forum whenever there were more fans than I think it was like 12,200, right around that range, inside the Forum last night for the game. I've been there when there's been more fans. I've never felt more energy. So, you know, we can talk to you about the energy in the Forum during playoff basketball, but if you've never been there, I don't think that you really understand what it is, because you can see it, you can feel it whenever you're watching on TV, but there's nothing like
being there.
Man, no. it was everything that I expected it to be and more last night for my first, you know, in person playoff game for the Grizzlies. So we'll get ready. You got anything else, man?
No, man, that's it for me.
All right, we're gonna get out of here, guys. We'll tell you about our partner here at HoopBall. It's a MyBookie. MyBookie.ag is the best online sports book out there. Go over there, sign up, use the promo code HoopBall. They're going to match your initial deposit 50%. They have more lines and better odds than any other sports book. They're here for the players. Their motto is simple. It's you bet, you win, you get paid. They've got a full-service casino that is there 24 hours a day. It works in all 50 states. Go and check them out. Use our promo code HOOTBALL. Get your initial deposit match. Get that free money and go win some money. You can get the show on Twitter at HootballGrizz. I'm at DWill2111. Isaac, get us out of here as we head into game five.
Yeah, man, you can find me on Twitter at Isaac_Rivals. Just as David said, go over, follow us at HootballGrizz, man. We really appreciate that. Hopefully, when we come back on here, we'll be discussing a big Grizz win and previewing game six. But even if not, man, we're going to have coverage throughout the summer. We got a special guest. We're going to be talking a lot of NBA draft. Don't want to rush it, but I'm excited about that. Hashtag get giddy about Josh Giddey. But that's my guy. I'm going to preview that a little bit coming up. That's my guy in the draft. I know he probably won't be there at 17, but we're going to talk about that a lot in the future. But again, man, make sure you join us here at Football Grizz. And we'll join game five tomorrow night, and we'll be back here following that game. Until then, go Grizz.
This has been a Hoop Bowl presentation.